So, my uncle was a bowel surgeon. It's a great afternoon, after lunch topic, isn't it? And he used to trot off to the hospital every Thursday for his weekly round of bowel surgery. And this was in the 70s and 80s, and he became more and more concerned about the increasing frequency he saw in the population of bowel cancer and other colorectal diseases. To the point where he insisted on my poor aunt every day having to bake fresh bread for the house, because the stuff she could buy off the shelf at the supermarket to make bread from, or ready-made bread, just wasn't good enough for his kids to eat. She was somewhat of a saint, my aunt, so she did do that. But if you think about now, 40 years later, when we have an increasing awareness of these sorts of diseases in our diet and the role of diet in causing them, we've got a number of exciting, I think, technologies being developed and being commercialized that will generate value for farmers and processors and of course, consumers. Take the BarleyMax product that's now found in a number of breakfast cereals in Australia. I eat it every morning. It's actually been commercialized in Japan now too. It's a high-fiber product. If you think about the Japanese diet, there's not an awful lot of fiber in it. So that line of products is doing very well there at the moment. And people are being convinced about the health benefits this product, barley, that's a barley-derived product, a naturally bred product, can give them. There's another product that's also in the pipeline at the moment. It's called high amylose wheat, and it's been commercialized in the US as HealthSense, is what it's called. So high amylose is again a form of fiber, a resistant starch that's can be bred for to increase levels to the point where it can confer health benefits in the diet. Clinical trials can prove these. Now, the amazing thing about HealthSense is it's a drop-in technology. So this form of wheat could potentially drop into any baking or flour-derived value chain without any need for processing to change, without any anticipated changes to baking quality or anything else like that. It could become the default flour that's used right across the world in a few years' time. So automatically, people get the health benefit from eating it rather than have to maybe buy a boutique version of it and pay a lot more money for it. And there's other products out there as well. Ultra-low gluten barley, you may have heard that it was commercialized by the German brewer Radeberger, which is the largest brewer in Germany, which of course is a pretty significant business, you might imagine. Because even celiacs like to drink beer, you know. And they prefer to drink a natural product rather than one where the gluten's been removed through some sort of chemical process. And one final example is oats. Oats have high levels of beta-glucans. They're good for blood cholesterol. They actually lower it. And we can see the genetics in oats and be able to increase levels of beta-glucan in oats as well. So all of these examples, I think, represent huge value-adding opportunities for Western Australian grain growers. And they're technologies that come with the seed. So they don't need to involve necessarily any post-farm gate processing and maybe value lost to the farmer. In fact, it's value to be gained by the farmer through a premium paid for that grain. And I think it's a real success story when you start thinking about the whole propagation of values all the way down the value chain for a whole range of people. I think the most exciting example of value-added functional healthy grains is the story around fish oil canola. It got recently deregulated for growth, for production in North America, and will soon for other countries in the world, including Australia. This is a line of canola that has high levels of long-chain omega-3 fatty acids, which is what salmon and other aquaculture species need in their diets, and unfortunately, which salmon farmers need to use wild fish stocks to feed those salmon. So imagine a plant-based industry, a new version of canola that can supply that omega-3 for salmon and not need to use wild fish stocks, and for a canola grower to get another $30, $40, maybe $100 a tonne for their product. Who knows, one day maybe you might even consume it in your fish oil tablets. So some exciting, I think, technologies on either in reality and coming down the pipeline for grain growers that really tap into this emerging middle class north of us in Asia that are having an increasing awareness around diet and health and the concern their governments have about a potential tsunami of lifestyle diseases their health system's going to be having to deal with in a few years' time. Imagine the kind of health burden, type 2 diabetes or bowel cancer, the Chinese government might be thinking about, for example. So I want to switch directions now and tell you a little bit about some exciting stuff that's also going on in digital agriculture. You heard Tash talking about the sorts of trends that are happening at the moment. We've recently developed an app. You can download it on your phone. It's called GrainCast, and it's an app that forecasts grain yields in farmers' paddocks. You might say, well, what's so special about that? Haven't farmers been able to do that for quite some time now? And it's true. We've been at this sort of game now for about 20 years. GrainCast is another step forward, though, in this technology, in that it also provides a more automated service so that farmers can walk out into their paddocks or in their homes and through automated discovery of where they are, actually bring the relevant information together so that they can get a yield forecast relevant to their farm. But I think what's most noteworthy about GrainCast is it highlights three features, I think, about digital innovation that are really quite exciting. And they represent, I think, what the potential that potential value that digital ag can unlock for our sector. The first is that you can do an awful lot around creating exciting and new opportunities, digital services, through just innovating with existing information, without even needing to do any research and development. Bringing together existing information in new ways, what we call innovation, is actually often what's all required in these situations, and that's largely what GrainCast has happened to do. The second really interesting feature about it is that not only benefits farmers, and God knows I spent a long period of my career developing knowledge and digital systems to serve farmers and their agronomists and consultants, but in the case of GrainCast, not only is it providing forecasts that are relevant to grain growers, but it's also of interest to the likes of CBH, who have got to shift that crop and make decisions about opening and closing bins each season. It's of interest to insurers who are interested in marketing multi-peril crop insurance to farmers. It's of interest to commodity forecasters like ABARES in the government. And this information can be reused for different applications at the relevant scale of interest. And that's a really exciting thing as well in terms of servicing all sorts of other stakeholders in the agribusiness system. And then I think the final really interesting feature is these sorts of businesses are scalable to form digital export industries potentially for our state and country. This technology can be eminently applied in other jurisdictions if the information is there and if the business opportunity is there. There's a real opportunity for Australia to be playing on the world stage, exporting its digital ag services for other farmers and players in their systems. And I think you've seen from Tash and maybe from others that you know of, there are emerging businesses in Australia that will one day, I think, tap into those markets, provided we can provide their support. So there you have it. Functional grains, digital ag, a taste of some of the R&D that's helping WA Agribusiness advance. Thank you.